Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and happy birthday, America. Our guest reminds us that we could celebrate today because it is the nation's real Independence Day, when the Second Continental Congress voted unanimously to sever its ties with Britain. That happened on July 2nd, which is today. Happy birthday. Christopher Phillips is our guest. Christopher is Senior Education Fellow at the National Constitution Center. He has been with us many times before. He's written these really interesting books based on what he does. He convenes Constitution Cafes, mini constitutional conventions. He's an ethics fellow at Harvard, and he has kicked off a whole new campaign today, the DeclarationProject.org. The aim, he says, is to tap into our revolutionary heritage and sensibility and evolve a more open and inclusive democratic society. There are three elements to this Declaration Project, and we'll hear all about them with Christopher, who is the foremost specialist in the Socratic method, a true believer in asking questions, author of Socrates Cafe, A Fresh Taste of Philosophy, Six Questions of Socrates, A Modern-Day Journey of Discovery Through World Philosophy, and Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. We'll be welcoming phone calls, of course, from you during the course of this hour for your declaration or for questions you may have about Declaration of Independence, of Rights, of Principles from all over the U.S. That's part of his project right now. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Christopher, hello. It's been a while. How are you?
Well, hello.
Hi.
I'm doing fine. It's good to be back on your program.
Great to have you here on this day when we could celebrate. Why don't we celebrate Independence Day today?
Well, that's a very good question. I know John Adams would be befuddled. He wrote to his wife. He predicted that this is the day when we'd have the equivalent of barbecues and fireworks and all those things. But turns out he was 2 days off that we waited to celebrate after the Declaration of Independence was officially published, rather than the day that the Second Continental Congress voted unanimously with one abstention to declare independence.
Hmm. Well, if it had been in this day and age with everything instantaneously communicated, it would have been today, Christopher.
It would have been.
No doubt. So you've always got something interesting going on. You started this whole new project, the DeclarationProject.org, and it's really fascinating. I've looked at it online. What is it, and why did you start this declaration collection?
Well, you know, Kathleen, as with everything I do, it's kind of a serendipitous stumbling. I was, in other words, I didn't mean to. But what happened, I was actually holding a Constitution Cafe at the National Constitution Center, where I've been a senior fellow, and a precocious 12-year-old said, you know, what we need is not any sort of new constitutional amendments, but we need to go back and start from scratch with a complete reboot. And she said, what we need is a Declaration of Independence, because the system as it exists today is so corrupt that people don't even obey the Constitution, people who are supposedly give their oath to obey the highest law in the land. And she had me so curious that I started doing some gumshoe work online, and I started coming across all these declarations of independence, of rights, of principles that were fashioned and modeled and adapted from our July 4th, 1776 document, but that had been used by, you know, women's suffrage movement, by civil rights movement, to spark new sort of advances that would bring the promise of our democracy more into alignment with practice. And I decided, well, I think I should share them. I went to all this trouble to collect them. And then one thing just led to another, and now I thought, well, maybe people are apathetic also in part because they don't really quite know where they want to dive in and make our democracy more in line with what their vision is. And so there's that My Declaration component to it, where they're invited to submit their own personal declarations.
Start their own campaign, right?
Their own campaign. I think, you know, there's this one poll that shows, well, a couple things. It shows that most Americans believe that our founders would be embarrassed by what we've done with what they had envisioned, that they, what they had sort of sacrificed as the last sentence of our declaration goes, their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, to achieve, that we have fallen far short of the mark. They believe that our polls show again and again that they believe that those that they vote into elective office do not heed their will in any way, shape, or form. But it also shows that there is pervasive apathy, but that Americans are honest enough to say that they are in part to blame, that they themselves are not getting into the fray and making things right. And so I'm hoping that the Declaration Project and the My Declaration component of it will give people an opportunity to kind of struggle over what their personal declaration would be and what they would commit to doing in the civic sphere to make things better. Because sometimes people don't dive in because they don't know exactly what they would want to dive into, what they would want to devote their energies to. I know that I struggled personally with it myself because there's, frankly, an embarrassment of choices.
There are many.
You have to decide, to put blinders on and make a commitment, not just for yourself but for the generation to come. So my big thing, and I posted, was a declaration for child kind. I must have gone through 10 drafts before I realized this was sort of my baby, and this is what I want to devote a good portion of my
life. And what is that, Christopher? Tell me about it.
Well, it's basically, I became a dad really late. I'm 55, and my two-year-old became two today.
Oh,
on a real
really?
Declaration of Independence, yes.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yes, Sibley is, she's at a movie right now, so Daddy can talk on the phone. I personally believe that as I began researching this, one of the things I came across was that children and youth actually enlisted in the American Revolution. If you look at that iconic Spirit of 76 painting, there is a child who's one of the drummers marching through
yes.
the thick of battle.
Right.
They put their lives on the line along with their older counterparts. They also believed in risking their lives and fortunes and sacred honor for this greater good. And yet they are marginalized in the political sphere. They are considered citizens in the making and in no way citizens made. When I argue that no matter what age and stage of life we're in, that we're always both. And I believe that if they were allowed to vote, that they would be a formidable block, and that things like actually having the world-class education that President Obama says all kids deserve, things like having a real say in the way that they go about learning, would change dramatically if they did have a greater voice. So I do make the provocative argument that children should be allowed to vote. And that we should lower the voting age to the age at which we can document that children actually served in the American Revolution.
So what age is that?
Well, from what I'm reading, and I've come across things that say that they were as young as 9. I mean, we can show, like Andrew Jackson enlisted at age 13.
Oh, did he really?
He sure did. Ooh. So there were many kids like that. In fact, quite often a younger sibling would go and serve instead of an older sibling who was considered more vital working on a farm. So I think that I'm not saying we should lower it, to 0, but I do think that if a 9-year-old served in the American Revolution and we can document that and that they bought in and were galvanized into this idea of all men were created equal, then we should lower the voting age to that age.
Well, and when you think about all of the laws or lack thereof or concerns that we need to address now that are going to affect those who are 9 and 10, 11 and 12, the climate, all kinds of issues,
right,
that they should have some say in it. And this was prompted on your part by a 12-year-old who got you thinking.
It was prompted by a 12-year-old. In fact, one of the declarations I've listed in the declaration collection is from someone at 12-year-old, at the age of 12. He's now a teenager who gathered about 40,000 signatures for unanimous declaration of independence from the use of fossil fuels.
Huh.
Presented the declaration to Congress. And there's a photo of this amazing thing that he did. He's 12 years old.
Oh.
When I mentioned this idea of lowering the voting age to 9, 10, 11, 12, a lot of my contemporaries roll their eyes. But I have to say that in my peregrinations around the U.S. holding Constitution cafes and democracy cafes, which is another dialogue initiative we now have, quite often it's the younger ones who are more astute on the issues than those who are older. I don't think it's far-fetched to consider allowing them to be much more in the mix than they are now. And quite often, everything from peace movements to environmental activism is launched by young people. So I think we give them short shrift when we don't include them as more and more part of this all men are created equal.
Mm. Well, I hate to make this the only question, but I think that we're going to have our lines pretty much flooded if I ask, which I have to right now. Do you agree with Christopher that the voting age should be 9-year-olds? When people could serve in the Revolutionary War. I never thought I would ask this question this hour, but that's, you know, what happens with radio. You never know what's going to be said. What do you think? Should 9-year-olds and above vote? Our number is 800-486-8655. And they're little phone lines. I thought they might. So we'll hear some interesting thoughts. Christopher, when you say that our democracy, the founders would find our democracy unrecognizable and on life support, what do you mean?
Well, for one thing, they had meant for the House of Representatives to be truly representative. They had never meant for the number to be frozen at 435, and there's nothing in the Constitution that would warrant that. They, if you look at our Constitution, they bequeathed to us one member of Congress for every 30,000 constituents. Instead, we have one member for every 710,000. So they have these fiefdoms. The number was frozen in 1911, tragically. And so we've never, it would just take a simple majority vote to unfreeze it, but it's never been done. And I think that, and mostly because there's just never been a hue and cry to do that. So there's simply no way that representatives can be truly representative when they have such a large constituency, these large fiefdoms with 24 or so unelected staffers. Rather than having elected people every step of the way in very intimate districts. Mm. Our founders envisioned that we would have a very vast republic, but that it could nonetheless be kept intimate by having these very small congressional districts. And I think it's a shame that we've abrogated that.
And it might take, obviously, it would take a lot more than this, but it might make this whole issue of money in politics a little less important if you had a smaller district, because you wouldn't have to be on the phone. If you got a whole big space, then you'll count on just, you know, a few people who have a lot of money to give you your money.
Well, if you can throw your hat in the ring and you only have to get your message out to between 30,000 and 60,000, virtually anyone could be a viable candidate. So it'd make for a much more pluralistic house, much more colorful house. I mean, look at the way our members of Congress are behaving right now. I mean, they put children to shame. We call their behavior childish, and if I were a child, I'd be insulted by that. They're behaving like, adults behaving badly. They don't speak to each other. And there's this kind of divisiveness when they're supposed to kind of be role models for younger people. So I do think that it's not in any way sort of an outlandish thing to think that, well, maybe if we did go back to the original vision of our founders and had far more representatives, combined with allowing younger people to vote, maybe things would be radically different and much more in line with the vision of our framers and founders.
Let's go to our people in our audience for a moment. And Christopher Phillips is our guest this hour. He is calling today the actual Declaration of Independence Day for a new program, Declaration Project, that calls for several things, a declaration collection, which he's put together, which is fascinating. And we'll talk more about this, the number of countries and movements who have looked at our remarkable Declaration of Independence and used it as a model for their own. He also calls for My Declaration, a space for people of all ages and all walks of life to sculpt and share their political voice by crafting a declaration of their own. So if you want to give us what your declaration would be, we would love to hear from it. Let's celebrate the 4th in full measure. And he also has a Spirit of 76 Cafe, which is an online Socratic inquiry that launches today, our birthday, and features in-depth explorations of liberty, freedom, equality, duty, and sacrifice for a greater good. Let's go to Marcus in Madison first. Hi, Marcus.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to call and say thank you for the show, the topic. I love it. I am a social studies teacher. I just graduated last year, and thank you for creating this system where people can get up and get out and talk about what their Declaration of Independence is to them. I just wanted to say that I agree with the idea that minors should be able to vote because they are, yes, the future of the country, and they have opinions. They can get invested in topics just like anybody else, and I think it's important that we instill this tradition of democracy at a young age so that it continues into their adulthood so that they're constantly participating. I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marcus.
Yes, I think that the more invested they are, the more they feel like they're stakeholders, the more that they will give back to us. I think the dividends will pay exponentially. Once you realize that you can vote and you really do have a genuine say, I would think that you would become even more immersed in the issues and feel like you do have a vital stake in writing any sort of pathways that you feel are kind of crooked right now, and that sort of bring things more in line with your notions of social justice.
Mark, Richland Center, hi.
Thank you. This whole Declaration of Independence as a founding document makes so much sense when you're talking about the community rights advocacy groups that are forming in many places, especially you mentioned earlier the environmental advocacy that's going on, because they use the Declaration of Independence as the founding document to say in their own communities, this is our water, this is our land, this is our air, and you can't come in here and mess it up. So the state of New York has banned fracking. They banned fracking in the town of Denton, Texas, where fracking originated, but then the state of Texas has put a ban against the ban. Now the challenge in a legal framework is to take that basis of the declaration saying this is our land, this is our water, you can't mess with it, and see if the Supreme Court will hold that document to no longer be legally valid. If they do that, then of course we're not actually in charge, and we know that they've sold out to corporate interests, but the very corporate interest of the time of the Declaration of Independence is what that declaration was fighting against.
Well, that's very eloquently said. I hope you'll post that on the My Declaration page. I think quite often movements begin when more and more people are enlightened about things. So I think it behooves those of us who do care about these issues to make people aware of that. Quite often movements get started just with one sort of lone wolf at first here and there, issuing some sort of declaration, and maybe others kind of do the same thing spontaneously elsewhere. Polls show that Americans are in what one Rasmussen pollster called a pre-revolutionary state. I mean, they're really, really mad and upset about the way things are, but they really don't quite know what to do about it. But far from being an excuse, I think we have to use it as a motivator to make decisions about committing some serious portions of our time to writing things.
And it's a good time to do it because it is really extraordinary, Christopher, isn't it? When you look at what our revolutionary heritage it is, when you look at what people did in 1775 and before, they were brave, they took on this huge, powerful country, and they looked at what was unfair, and they fought it, and they won.
Yes, and that's the thing. As I was collecting these declarations, and one thing I discovered was that there were scores of state and local declarations in the American colonies that then became states before the declaration was issued on July 4th, 1776. But it gave me the chills, in a way, to just read these eloquent documents that weren't just words, but words turned to deeds, where people were bought into these words and were willing to risk it all, from the down and out to the well-to-do.
Yes.
And so I asked myself, would we be willing to do that today, for these ideas? It has spoken to me very deeply, and I felt like, well, the least I can do is provide this sort of modern-day agora online, the space and place to bring people together and see what that might lead to.
Mm-hmm. And what are the issues today? When you look at that, which is particularly egregious, what's on the list?
Well, one thing that Americans across the board are deeply concerned about is the way campaigns are financed.
Yes.
You can ask Americans of virtually any political stripe, and that is of deep concern. Meanwhile, those they elect into office, once again, just roll their eyes at it, because they know that no matter how concerned Americans are, that they that there just isn't enough of a hue and cry to change things right now. And so the system continues as it is, to the detriment of us all. I think that, and again, that's why there's that sort of pre-revolutionary sentiment of feeling sort of impotent to do anything, combined with some real anger. And I think that there are ways to go about channeling this. And one of the key ways, I believe, there are already nonprofit movements afoot to vastly increase the number of members in the House of Representatives. So one could go ahead and join one of these groups right now and get involved in something like that and begin kind of taking baby steps towards bringing about change. And baby steps, quite often, once a critical mass is reached, can turn into giant steps.
Mm-hmm. I think another issue now, and it certainly is one that Bernie Sanders, who people kind of looked at, oh, it's Bernie Sanders, he drew 10,000 people in Madison yesterday. He's drawing these huge crowds. Not everybody's going to agree with what his philosophy is, but he's really tapped into this issue of wealth inequality in a huge way. I mean, it's an issue in this country, isn't it?
It is an issue, and I think what we need are more people like Bernie Sanders across the political spectrum who are sort of statesmen, too, and don't sort of just tell a certain small segment what they think that they want to hear, but really understand that our elected officials are woefully out of step with the sentiments of ordinary Americans. Ordinary Americans are ready to bring about very radical change, and change of a sort that really makes it possible for our country to be a model again for what a democratic society can be. There's extraordinary wisdom among ordinary people, but the way that the political society is structured right now is they're just banging against a wall. But again, at the same time, it's really up to us to be that change that we want to see. So I think a lot of people go see Bernie Sanders because what he's saying resonates with people. I dare say that a lot of folks who go to see him might not necessarily be of the same political bent as he is, but nonetheless share his deep concern.
Mm, interesting. Christopher Phillips is our guest today. He is kicking off a new campaign, and he's always got something interesting going on. He calls it a subtly rabble-rousing project, declarationproject.org. The aim to tap into our revolutionary heritage and sensibility to evolve a more open and inclusive democratic society in ways in which everyone matters and counts. Do you think that he said a lot of interesting things, that we are Americans now are in this pre-revolutionary state. We have that sentiment right now. If you were to write your declaration, some of this is personal, this campaign, what would your declaration say? And we have yet to get to all of the groups, all of the other countries who have used our Declaration of Independence as a model. And we're also asking, do you think that younger people who will be affected by a lot of policies should be allowed to vote? Wouldn't that be interesting to see what would happen if 9 and above could vote in this country? Well, I wonder what would happen. What do you think? Well, join us, please. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email here is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. Do go to Christopher's site because it's beautifully done. It's filled with all kinds of history and a way for you to become engaged in many of these issues as well, declarationproject.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to more phone calls. Judith is our next caller. Hello, Judith.
Hello. Wonderful program always. I would like to know why we can't require anybody elected to office to make a pledge that they will work with everyone else they're in, whatever branch they're in, and that they can't stand up like I'm having a senior moment, and I can't remember his name, but I think he was the speaker, is the Speaker of the House, made this announcement that his big goal would be to work and black Obama at everything he wanted to do. That was their goal, his goal anyway, to work against that, vote everything down. If you say that, how can you remain in office? Because don't you have to be willing to work together? And then a lot of schools do have elections of their students, you know, pseudo-elections before any issue that's up, and I think they just don't publicize them. I would love to hear more about, you know, every school around me that's has these votes, and find out what the actual results are. So
I remember those from school, don't you, Judith? We used to have them when I was in school.
Yes.
They were great fun.
Absolutely. And even doing more of the publicity would get people used to the idea. I'm not sure how public media, how all the being online with everything and the intense interest in music and movie stars. And when we have grown people still voting for Donald Duck in my township, for anything, you wonder what a 9-year-old might do. So I don't know how effective it would be to really allow that.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be we could do more to say what happens in the elections in schools that go around now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Judith. Let's start with her point. By golly, she's right about this, and I think most people would agree. You get elected, everybody in this body, you may not agree with them, but everybody matters here. You all got voted in, you all counted, and by golly, we're going to talk to each other. Is that asking too much, Christopher?
It's not, and I think that once people realize that maybe our things, they should ask themselves: Would things get any worse if we took a chance and included a much larger, range of ages in the voting process? Have we reached a point where it's worth maybe taking that chance and seeing what the outcome is? I have traveled and held dialogues all over the U.S. in rural areas, urban areas. You know, one thing kids really want is to be able to be directly elected, for instance, to school boards. And to have a genuine vote there, and that because they're very dissatisfied with the mountains of mandates that have to be met with testing, and they are convinced that there has to be a better way, but that it really won't come about until and unless they have a direct say and a direct vote.
Thank you, Judith, so much for your call. Let us go next to Cody in Appleton. Hi, Cody.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I just wanted to make a couple quick comments. As far as the age, opening up the age, I guess to me I don't really think that would make much of a difference. We already don't have a good turnout for the young people in this country. And I think that's more to do with people just feeling apathetic about the political system as a whole, not really seeing it. Large distinction between the two parties that we have to choose from now, and most of the debates happening kind of being the same rhetoric, the same identity politics. I think people really see that the whole country is kind of moved politically kind of to the right. There's really not much of a distinction when it comes down to voting and corporate values and that sort of thing. So I think getting back to the caller's original comments about this, pre-revolutionary force that seems to be kind of building, I think it has a lot to do with people not feeling like we have a choice and voting for people like, you know, fictional characters like Donald Duck is just kind of this expression of apathy. And people want real choices. People want real policy differences. They don't want to just feel like they're just being representing these people that are representing corporate interests and want to actually make real change. And I think I'm not a huge fan of Bernie Sanders, but I think at least his message resonates kind of along those lines that there's something seriously wrong in this country. People are just kind of getting by and not knowing what to do. And we've kind of lost those, institutions in this technological age where people can get together and talk and make change happen at the local level. So People are really frustrated, not knowing what to do.
Well, what about not knowing? What about apathy? Take on apathy, Christopher.
Well, again, I think that as you go lower and lower and down into middle school, you'll see that there is a really engaged idealism among young people that can sort of lead to jadedness by the age of 18 if they don't really have a direct say in the way things go. But I would say that if we lowered it even further, that we might see that suddenly there was a much greater percentage of youth involvement in voting. We won't know until we try it. I think one of the reasons Bernie Sanders is drawing such large crowds is because he's such a breath of fresh air. Agree or disagree with him, nothing he says seems to be politically calculated, seems to be based on what the latest polls show. He hasn't had some, you know, just change of heart.
Absolutely, right.
And I think that speaks to people. I think it excites them. But at the same time, that you know, and that's the thing, you vote for one guy or one woman to be president, and then you look to them to bring about all the change, and they simply can't. There does have to be a groundswell of a grassroots activism where we do bring about the types of changes in the system. And again, my belief firmly is that we do have to radically change quickly the number of representatives that we have, and that it's and all. It doesn't take a constitutional amendment; it simply
right.
takes a vote,
yeah.
a majority vote. Members of Congress will not change a thing until they feel like their institution is being threatened. And the only way to do that is to actually show them that you have the numbers to kick the bums out if they're not going to heed the will of the people.
I do want to talk just a moment, because another part of the project is the Declaration Collection of Independence Rights of Principles from the U.S. and all over the world. Why don't we start just with some of the other nations that have looked at our declaration of a model? And if you would, some people might find this surprising that one of them that you feature comes from Ho Chi Minh.
Yes, much to the chagrin of our elected officials at the time. He starts out his declaration with a direct quote from Jefferson and Company. This is a document that has been a springboard for many. Ours is a document that's been a springboard for many independence movements, from Venezuela to Maori and indigenous groups in New Zealand to Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam. It's just astonishing, especially when you keep in mind that the Declaration of Independence at the time was meant to be just a workaday document, in the sort of grubby world of politics that would have wound up in oblivion if we had been on the losing side. But it has come to be seen sort of as this timeless, eternal text that people look to across the ages and across the cultures as kind of a moral touchstone when they
right.
want to launch their own vision of what independence might mean. As much as we might dramatically disagree with what Ho Chi Minh's own vision is, nonetheless, it's fascinating that it touched him as much as it's touched many of us.
Mm-hmm. I go to a party with friends. My father is not alive anymore. I used to go to a family where the people who hosted, his dad worked with my dad. They were best friends for some 65 years. So this great sense of history. It's always a wonderful day. But the first time that I brought the Declaration of Independence some 15 years ago, I think people kind of looked askance, particularly the young people. Oh, no, do we really have to read this? But now they expect me to walk in with the Declaration of Independence, and everybody gathers around and we read it, and it's always very moving to do that.
It's an incredible thing. My family on my dad's side immigrated from Greece, and one of the things they did was on Independence Day was they all read a section of it together. We went around in a circle.
Yes.
So I sort of come by my declaration fascination pretty honestly.
I guess you do. I didn't know that about you. Let's go to Gloria in Bristol. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Great. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I'm rolling my eyes as well at Christopher for thinking that a 9 or 10-year-old can even comprehend what freedom means. And comparing kids from 1775 to 2015 is like comparing apples to oranges. Kids back in 1775 were fighting for food on their plate with their parents. I mean, kids today, they have no idea what it means to actually be free. Mm-hmm. And kids at that age, 9 and 10 years old, they are completely dependent on their parents. They will vote exactly how their parents want them to vote. So we really wouldn't be getting anywhere. It would be a complete waste of time. Kids would have to go through the Constitution of the United States. They need to understand what that means before they can even think about voting.
Christopher.
Well, one thing is that a survey from the National, from the Constitution Center among Americans of voting age shows that the vast majority of Americans of voting age have never read the Constitution. I guess older Americans have that in common with what you purport that younger Americans have. They have, even those of voting age haven't taken the time to read the Constitution. I have to say that things aren't so rosy for so many young people. Record numbers of young people are homeless. Record numbers of young people are without decent health care. Record numbers of young people are without decent education. I live in Philadelphia, and I can speak to the fact that the public school education there is an absolute shambles. So I have a feeling that young people wouldn't just march in lockstep with the blunders of older Americans. In fact, if you look at the decisions made by adults, we've seemed to just be caroming from one crisis to another. So again, I would dare say that younger folks might show us a better way. And once again, I can point to this one declaration I just recently posted to the Declaration Collection that shows this massive environmental movement started by a 12-year-old.
Yeah. What did the president say? You, also on your site is the president, Barack Obama, on January 17, 2009, calling for a new Declaration of Independence. What was his declaration?
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out. He did say that it's time that we sort of resurrect and resuscitate ideals that we had and have spoken to, and that we all sort of need to sort of feel like we're on this in this together and kind of reach a higher ground. But I've been going to his Twitter page. He opened up his own personal Twitter page because I want to get him to post a declaration on my declaration. You know, I have a little bit of hope out of my stubborn persistence because he has been doing more and more things with alternative media. So virtually every day I'm going to go to his Twitter page and ask him, well, what is this new Declaration of Independence that you're calling for? Because maybe it's something that he wants to distance himself from now that he's not president-elect but the president. But this is also a document that he said in his autobiography his grandmother read to him regularly. And so obviously it resonates and speaks with him deeply. And I would just be on cloud nine if he'll respond and post his own declaration on our page.
Oh, that would be nice. We asked him to be. He's in La Crosse, Wisconsin today, and we wrote him a letter asking him to join us for a while. Wouldn't that have been something if he had said yes, and then you were here and you could have talked about this? And oh my gosh. That would have been something,
well,
right?
Never say never.
Right. It may still happen at some point. Mr. President, if you're in Wisconsin still, you can call in and we can talk about this very issue. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. Gloria, thanks for your call. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Christopher Phillips is our guest this hour. He is a foremost specialist in the Socratic Method. He is the author of Socrates Cafe, Constitution Cafe, other books. And today, on the actual day of the Declaration of Independence, he has launched a brand new project, which is what we have been spending some time talking about and just having a really good time. It's the Declaration Project. And if you go to that site online, you'll find declarations from other countries similar to ours, how we inspire them, or from organizations. You will find people expressing their own declarations and also a forum, Spirit of 76 Facebook discussion group. Beverly in Barron is next. Hi, Beverly.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to have your speaker explain how we would handle a larger House of Representatives when the 435 now cannot be controlled or share their votes or anything like that. In other words, we would be creating greater chaos if we had more representatives.
Well, I think that we can look at the democracy that existed in ancient Athens as a model. They would just corral the first 5,000 citizens into a stadium and just have at it legislating with one another. That's how much they trusted one another.
Oh, my.
It was probably cacophonous, but that's better than the dead silence that we have right now among members on both sides of the aisle. I think that if we had much more intimate constituencies, what we would have is a greater plurality of political parties and micro-parties where very creative alliances would have to be forged every step of the way. I think, and also in this age of high-tech wizardry, certainly we could come up with some very effective ways in which they could, you know, communicate with one another. There's an utter lack of communication right now because, as one of the callers said, they're both barely distinguishable from one another if you buy into the argument that they're both so dependent on the corporate coffers to just keep this bankrupt system going. So I would say if we're really, as polls show, as upset about the way things are as we claim we are, then it's time to allow this ossified system to kind of unravel and to try something new. And if we need to recapture anything in this country, I dare say it's our will to experiment again, to try on new things. It's not to say that everything's going to work as we might want, but what we have right now is just absolute stasis. And if any cursory study of human history shows that so far all the greatest of the great civilizations have had a period of ascent and then stasis and then decline. And I just don't want that to happen on my watch. And at the very least, I want to do what I can to try to alter that.
Thanks, Beverly. Kate in Holman. Hi.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so intrigued by Christopher because I'm a 40-year retired teacher. Mm. And he thinks out of the box. And that was my favorite kind of kid. However, I do want to point this out, that if a 9-year-old votes, and every year in my classroom for 40 years I had mock elections, and every year in my district, it was pretty conservative, although I am in La Crosse County, which is not conservative as a whole. The kids voted for their parents, as they do. That's what they do. But my thought is, 9-year-olds of racists also vote. And we have all seen pictures of very young people being raised in environments that are so harmful to minorities. And that worries me a bit. But I do love his idea. I don't want to negate it all. But it's food for thought, I guess, is all I'm saying.
Kate, what about your declaration? You sound like the kind of woman who may have given this some thought already.
I'm sorry, say that again?
What would your declaration be?
For voting?
No, for anything. Your declaration for the 4th, be it, you know, that 9-year-olds should vote, that we should, you know, abolish capitalism, we should, I don't know, give more money for foreign aid, whatever.
Maybe all of that. My declaration is I want to save the people I love the most. I have taught kids who have a mom and a dad working 4 jobs, doing the best they can do. And I watched the demise of them and middle class. I guess my declaration is, can we just not save a certain class and make this country great again? I guess, that's my big declaration.
Yeah, there you go. And you said it out loud on the radio, and it's a good one. Christopher.
Well, I hope you post that on our My Declaration page. We just actually got a post earlier today from a career teacher who's opposed to the way that politicians have made a shambles of the existing educational system. So I really do hope that you'll post that. Maybe it sounds like lowering the age to 9 is giving some folks the heebie-jeebies. Maybe what if we lowered it to 13 at first, since that's the age in which we can show that Andrew Jackson enlisted and joined and risked everything. How about that?
All right. Entirely reasonable. A lot happens between 9 and 13.
A lot happens.
And it would give 13-year-olds who are going through a really rough time in life something to consider, right? Something that's out of their world, of their bodies changing, and they can become involved in a larger thing beyond themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Kate, for your call. Sharon in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi there. How are you today?
All right. How are you, Sharon?
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to hear what your guest thinks about trying to get term limits for our senators and representatives at the federal level. I feel that when our Constitution was written, our forefathers never believed people would make that a lifetime occupation.
Totally agree. The problem is, in order to have term limits, you'd probably have to have a constitutional amendment. And the chances of having a constitutional amendment enacted are slim to none. That's why I'm looking at routes that are and remedies that our existing constitution allows. And once again, it only takes a majority vote in Congress to unfreeze our republic and once again allow the number of members of Congress to incrementally increase as our population increases. And that's what happened until 1911. As soon as we have more members in the House of Representatives, as soon as they have smaller constituencies, I think you'll have people running to serve in Congress who aren't trying to be lifelong professionals as members of Congress. I think that will dissipate quickly. Right now, though, they're just so entrenched in this existing system, and they have so many benefits from keeping it as it is, that's not going to change. And they're certainly not going to allow a constitutional amendment to be enacted that would undermine them.
Mm. Well, I think you should run, Christopher, don't you? I mean, you would shake things up.
Do I have that rabble-rousing sensibility? Does that my soft-spoken Virginia
That's why you would be
really
effective, because you're a bit of a rabble-rouser.
Well, I had somebody come up to me at one of my latest dialogues and say, you don't look like you're subversive, but you certainly talk in a way that makes everything that, you know, you say sort of palatable. I used to heaven only knows, maybe I will. I would probably run for state office just to be closer to folks, but Kathy, maybe you've given me an idea.
Okay, good.
Sown a seed.
Well, think about what a bunch of rabble-rousers came before us.
Yes. Absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm a Virginian. I went to the, you know, William & Mary Jefferson's alma mater, and I studied government, and a lot of my studies, you know, revolved around him. His idea was that we need to institutionalize revolution, that we need a system of governance that actually fosters change if we're going to keep our democracy vibrant and if we're going to make it one that more and more people feel that they have a vested interest in. And I'm truly a firm believer in that. Probably at this juncture in my life, I think there's probably more that I can do right now, sort of, you know, as an outside of the system. But at some point, maybe I do have to stand up and be counted
as
be one of those dreaded politicians, too. Heaven only knows.
You wouldn't be dreaded. Well, give us give us the site again, and we have about a minute left, so that people can immediately go and give their declarations. And how do they do it?
Yes, if they'll just go to declarationproject.org, just one word, declarationproject.org, they will see the three elements to it, the Declaration Collection, My Declaration, and Spirit of 76 Cafe. If they want to go ahead and post a declaration, just click into My Declaration. They scroll to the bottom of that page, and they can have at it. And I really urge people of all political dispositions to feel free to make this their page where they can make their voice heard. I also urge people to join our Spirit of 76 Cafe discussion. It's ongoing right now, our very inaugural discussion on our Facebook page, which you can link right into that by clicking into the Spirit of 76 tab right at the top of our Declaration Project page.
Thank you so much, Christopher. It was great fun and inspirational, and happy birthday, America.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Christopher Phillips, Senior Education Fellow at the National Constitution Center. He regularly convenes Constitution Cafes. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and Scotty Myers for on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee. Happy 4th, everyone. We'll be with you on Monday for All Things Political.